My name is Marta Vogel. Whoops. I met Alex at, I think it was one of his urban survival classes, that he promised to talk about parking tickets are not all equal and how to break off unproductive relationships, among other things. I had the feeling I knew one small part of him and that somebody else knew some other part, perhaps totally different part. Maybe that's true for a lot of people, but I think particularly for him. At least at one time in his life, he had a vast array of hats, depending on his mood or the character he chose to be that day. So he could be a Greek fisherman type of hat, or the Rex Harrison, or lots of other characters. In various articles, the Washington Post called him the groovy guru, the guru of mishmash, and a middle-aged beach bum. He described himself as soldier, sailor, teacher, preacher, poet, playwright, entrepreneur. Some people these days might call this posture attention deficit disorder, but I like to think of it as a dilettante. He called himself an interdisciplinary miscellaneologist. One of the things he said to me early on when I met him was, I think you're real gutsy to deal with somebody like me. After all, I'm not your regular guy at the office who asked to borrow your eraser. That certainly was true. He was full of surprises. One time when he was driving, I had a bad case of hiccups, and with no warning at all, he pulled a hard, dramatic turn into a gas station on Wisconsin Avenue and screeched to a stop. Scared me to death, but it really got rid of my hiccups. And yes, I really enjoyed his laugh. He had a fiberglass cover for his pool in the backyard, and he had to cover it used it to cover it in the wintertime. It was like kind of like an armadillo shell. It had overlaying layers, segments, bolting to each other. And we were putting it up one winter, and I was on the outside holding a piece of shell up, and he was on the inside and couldn't see me and drilling the drill. Guess what? He drilled into my armpit, through to my armpit, and it's a good thing I had a heavy sweatshirt on, which it twisted the drill around and stopped it. I mean, we had a nice laugh at that. He did. He was a child in some ways, grabbing at life for fear it would leave with the next sunrise before he got his share. He delighted in small pleasures. And he was always thinking of ways to outsmart life. Some were more successful than others. Recently he said to me, I have red marker lines on lots of things around the house. And I said, well, what does that mean? He said, that's a problem. I don't know. He had a lifelong habit of pointing out grammatical and logical errors in the Washington Post, and I did nothing to discourage this. In fact, I egged him on. Most reporters know nothing about math, he exclaimed, or how could Cortland Malloy make that mistake? Smith and me, it's supposed to be Smith and I. And as the Post cut back on editors, the game got much more exciting. And when I asked him once, what would you do for sport if you didn't have the Washington Post to kick around? He said, I have to look at my own faults, and that's a lot less fun. So we had an email correspondence going at the end, and he would tell me about his recurring falls. On May 31st, he wrote, as I fought to get up, I remembered burns. I am but hurt. I am not slain. I'll lie me down and bleed again, and then I'll rise and fight again. And he said, still fighting. A day before he died, he said, I've enjoyed this life about as much as I can. Yes, he did. I'll miss that laugh. Thank you.
Do I need the microphone? They bother me. My name is Gene Morrill, and I have a press release that I would like to share just a part of it with you. Melodrama returns to DC, the new Playhouse Cabaret. Washington is to be the home of a new theater cabaret called the Playhouse Cabaret, opening its doors to the public on March 25th with a revival of an old-time melodrama, The Drunkard, organized by three Washingtonians, Philip Doherty, Alec Fraser, and Gene Morrill. The Playhouse Cabaret, located at 1611 Q Street Northwest, has been created for the primary purpose of presenting entertaining theater in a cabaret environment in which the theatergoers may enjoy dinner and drinks with their drama. It's dated March 12th, 1965, and it was issued by Alec Fraser. I was the artistic director. How he found me, I cannot remember. But we opened. Now it said 1611 Q Street. Just an idea how smart this man was. That's the address of the Cairo Hotel. Now the Cairo Hotel at one time was a very, very, very famous place in Washington, D.C. At one time, it was the largest building in Washington, D.C. When we went to work, it was on harder times. Alex discovered a wonderful ballroom, which was a restaurant, with a full kitchen that was not being used. Because the rooms primarily at the Cairo at that time were being rented by the hour. He made a deal with the hotel. They would provide dinner, he'd bring in a theater. And that was us. And we went to work. We ran for over 22 weeks at the Cairo Hotel. We were very successful. I have reviews here that I'm going to leave for you. But about midway through, we began to discover we were in trouble at the Cairo. When I went in one evening and went around greeting the guests and talking, and one gentleman was very irritated. He said, "Look at this menu." I said, "Yes." "There's nothing on it that I can order." I said, what do you mean by that?" They said, "There's nothing on it." So I went to the kitchen, found out that the Cairo had not paid their butcher bill, so there was no meat in the kitchen. Well, after 22 weeks, we were down to baskets of pretzels and peanuts. But we didn't feel too bad about it, because if you went on Wednesday or Thursday, it was only $1.75. And on weekends, it was $2.50. So you can see his love of theater, not necessarily money. But he wasn't going to give up, and people know him that he never would. So we were about ready to move the whole operation to the Grace Episcopal Church in Georgetown, because we were doing good business without dinner. Well, something snuck in to take his attention. I don't blame him. I'm sure you also heard of Parents Without Partners, another one of his wonderful creations, which was a dance club for parents who wanted to dance and didn't have a partner. And that was kind of something that took his interest away from the cabaret, and also because we finally couldn't make a deal at Grace. But going back to 1965, this man and his love of theater, and we kept close because I'm in the professional theater, and when he was in need of an actor or a director, he'd give me a call. But the things that I remember fondly of this man was his infectious laughter. Whether it was a tough deal or whether it was just pretzels or peanuts and no meat, he could laugh at it. And then his bottom line thinking: we didn't fool around, we made a decision, and we acted. And in the theater, that's very unusual. So I appreciate all the fond memories that I've heard here today. And I can't tell you, when he got a hold of me, I was just finishing a master's degree at Catholic University. And I have been in the theater ever since in this city. So, God love him. He was an inspiration. Thank you.
I probably have the least reason to be here. I've known Mr. F, as we called him, the shortest amount of time, but I feel like I have a storybook coming to life in front of me here. I've heard all these names, and I know these stories. I've seen Alex for the last 2.5 years in a medical capacity, twice a week, every week, and I've had the pleasure of hearing these stories of a lifetime.
And I loved him. And you're not supposed to. There's supposed to be professional boundaries, you know, for those kinds of things. But the first time that I helped him with his iPod, because he didn't know how to make playlists, he came in the next time with an English primrose for our garden out in front of my office. And it was just, I said, I'm going to have trouble with these boundaries here. You know that. And he said, well, I'm a waning moon, so it's okay. But the story that I want to share with you has to do with Nathan. And he loved you so dearly. And he bragged on you so much. But he came in, you know, he had started to really wane. And I'd watch him come from the parking lot from his car across. And in 2.5 years, things had changed and slowed. And there wasn't such a spring in his step. And he wasn't as active. But hospice is my background, and he knew we could talk openly about what the changes in his life and what was happening, and I wasn't going to react with any kind of shock or, you know, I was just going to be present to what was happening for him. But this day, he came across the parking lot with a spring in his step, and he had his leather coat on that Alexa had Velcroed down the front for him so he could still get in and out of it easily. And such loving things. But he came across the parking lot with just a spring in his step and that blue shirt on that looked so lovely and alive. And he didn't tell me at first what had happened. We were just working. And I said, something's different today. And he said, yeah. And we just kept on working. And then he said, Nathan said something to me, and I'll never be able to tell him how much that meant to me, but maybe someone could, with a wink. So here I am. I said, well, what happened? And he said, well, we were supposed to have dinner together, just the two of us, one evening, and watch a movie, I think. And he said, Alexa or Ken came in and said, can't we go, or can't we be involved in this? And I think Nathan said to him, no, cool skipped a generation. And he said, I had to act cool because I couldn't let him know what that meant to me. But he said, no one has ever said such a wonderful thing to me. So you made his day. You made his life, really, Nathan. And I'm just really pleased to be a part of this celebration. I've heard Marta, I've heard Cynthia, I've heard Sandra, I've heard all of you.
I knew Alex from Hexagon, going back into the 60s. And in those days, Alex used to walk around with his Zorro hat and his black cape and his beard and the long hair. And he stood out as being a loner. But he threw some great parties at that house up in Northwest, and I remember Alexa as a preteen and a teenager in that place. But there was one story that stands out is back in, I guess it was the 70s, and we were playing at Trinity Theater. And it was the last night. And the last night of the Hexagon show is always sold out. And Alex was in the box office alone. And about, I guess, 10 minutes to showtime, he started selling the unclaimed tickets. But there was just one problem. They were all paid for. So when the people came to get their tickets, they were all gone. It created a little problem. And fortunately, I wasn't the house manager. I was just taking tickets at the door. But it impressed on me something about Alex, who had great ideas, but I sort of wondered about how he handled the details.
Well, we obviously knew he had a lot of humor. And he also was brilliant and also self-deprecating. My name is Ed Leos, and I'm a multi-generational friend of Alex Fraser. And it was a time when we communicated very, very regularly. And up until recently, we occasionally had a dinner. What I have here is basically a little summary of what, most of which has already been said, with a few stories added to it. Can you hear me okay? A little louder, okay. Alex, you are one of a kind. You live life to the fullest. For many years, we communicated regularly, gave parties together, jointly visited many social Washington affairs. We often explored business possibilities. Alex, you always came up with new and different ideas to consider. Whereas most people follow life where it takes them, you led life and chose its course. You were Alex, you were one of a kind. You explored new concepts in business, creative social endeavors, and arts, where you wrote and produced your own plays. And most of all, humor. Laughter was always a part of your conversation. I have two examples of that, and one of which of his self-deprecating wry humor. As we all know, he was very brilliant. And he told me of a time when he worked out in L.A. involving real estate, where you had to accept calls coming in, and that's how he kept you in business. And he told me that, he said, I'm smart enough to virtually eliminate every call to come in that's not being worthy of spending time with. And of course, that was an example of self-deprecating humor, because it tells him that basically I'm out of business. And secondly, we all know he had the beautiful home at the end in Rock Creek Park at the end of a small street. And he often accepted overnight guests. And so someone asked who he knew, a mutual friend, and I mentioned to him that he was looking for a place to stay for a couple of days, and Alex invited him. So the next morning, Alex calls me, and he said, 3 o'clock in the morning, I got up looking out the window to find out why a totally overloaded dump truck is bellowing snorts from its engine outside of my driveway at this time. And then he investigated additionally, and he said, oh, you failed to tell me of the house-shaking snoring problem the guest had. Occasionally, another mutual friend came to town, and we would have dinners, the three of us. That went on for about 10 years. Unfortunately, last summer when that happened, Alex didn't come, and I often wondered why that happened. But at these dinners, Alex always had an adventure to relate to us that would be ambitious for someone generations younger than him. When I read the article in the Post of your latest action, it occurred to me that it was your method of moving to your next adventure. I was not a bit surprised. After all, Alex, you are one of a kind.
Good afternoon. My name is Marvin Fell, and my wife is in the back. We were neighbors of Alex. I don't know how many years he lived. Obviously not as interesting houses in Rock Creek Park. We were in Kensington, but I have many stories about Alex, but I only two things like impressed me the most. One, he invited me to see one of his plays in Silver Spring. And he was already pretty elderly, and it was a play. And I'm thinking, he wrote a play. It's really about how to pick up women, experience pick up women. I was pretty impressed by that. and one other play experience, he told me he was having a play, and it was a Noel Coward play. I had seen it before, and the acting was not too good, and Alex was really embarrassed about that. He felt like he was responsible, but he said, I had to take the company they gave me. So I thought that was impressive. But the most impressive thing ever, we had a blackout a few years ago because Pepco didn't cut the trees. And the blackout must have lasted 4 days. And I went to stay with my wife's family, and I'm considerably younger than Alex was. And Alex stayed there the whole 4 days wearing his shorts and his small undershirt, and he's walking around like it's nothing. And then I found out Alex was a prisoner of war in Europe. I found that out because I went to the same rehab place that Alex. He never shared that. But he was definitely a tough old guy, and I'm going to miss him.
I'm Nathan Alexander Fraser, his grandson. And a lot of people before me have talked about, in some regards, that he was a teacher at the Open University, and talked about classes they took with him. Well, as a grandfather, he had a couple of classes he taught with me, such as laws that he found were very important in life, such as diminishing returns, Murphy's Law. There are also a couple of other classes he took with me, which is what to say and do when you're either getting mugged or talking with a criminal, and what are the benefits and disadvantages of wearing a leather jacket. Now, on a more serious note, the day that I learned that my grandfather had committed suicide was the day that California Chrome had lost the Belmont Stakes. And I knew something was wrong when my parents walked in with a bag, of like a big bag, like not the normal kind that they get me with, the inky dinky bag, but they got me a big bag of my favorite sour gummy worms. And I immediately knew something was wrong. And I had been worried about my grandfather's declining condition for the past couple months. So it was very upsetting to me, but it wasn't unexpected. I knew it was coming. And I knew he did it in the way that he wanted to, that he was happy with how he died. Though it was not a perfect exit, it was something that I think he was proud of, that he was able to do. But though I am very upset, and though I find so many places that just seem empty, I walk around my house and I realize that that was the chair he always sat in. And there was where his car was always parked. There's so many little places. What I do is I think back to the wisdom, information, and these lessons that he taught me. And I think that these aren't empty places. These are places where I should sit. These are places where I should hear this information and take it forward into my life. And I would also like to say that though my grandfather left by his own accord, he did not leave in a sad place. He did not have an unfulfilling life. As was mentioned, he was a teacher, he was a sailor, he was a director, he was a writer. He got an article in the Washington Post multiple times about him. I feel that that is a really glorious, glorious way to go. The fact that you don't have to be famous, but you'll be remembered. That you have influenced many people's lives in small but critical ways. So, though there is definitely a time for grieving, I believe right now in this service, this is a time where we should be happy. On the order of service, it says it is a celebration of the life of Alexander Fraser. And that's the same reason I'm wearing this white tie today. That though it may seem black, right now the world is white. He has given us so many gifts, we will bring them forward into our lives. And that is the most important thing. So, our future should be a happy one with the memory of Alexander Fraser, not a sad one with his absence. Thank you.
Keep afresh before us the moments of our high resolve. In New Orleans, there is a line that marches mournfully to the gravesite. And the musicians follow in measured steps, slow music, soft drumming. Then there is a ceremony at the site, and the body is lowered into the grave, covered over with dirt, blessed with flowers and with good words. And then the band kicks in again, deliberately uplifted, excited, ecstatic, in boldest celebration of the life that we have to live today. Keep afresh before us the moments of our high resolve. It is said that the good life is not measured in the number of breaths we take, but rather in the number of times when we are breathless. Thank you for your strength, for your fierceness, and for your tenacity in holding on to the joy and the spark that is life in the celebration of the life of Alex Fraser. As we go out, back and into the world, keep the spirit of joy and exploration and adventure and humor and singularity in mind. Hold on to this community, this company, and the beauty of our cathedral happening, the beauty of our presence. Go in peace. Go in love. Go in good graces. Our closing hymn is Love Will Guide Us. But before we do, I'd like to extinguish the chalice. Carry the flame of peace and love until we meet again.